This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
Join us right now, and I appreciate it. The host of the Talking Ball podcast with Pat Leonard. It's Pat Leonard. You can check that out on his YouTube channel. I just queued him up before the break. Pat Leonard covers the Giants for the New York Daily News, and we've got breaking news in this last hour. Russell Wilson to the Giants. Pat, thanks for joining us tonight.
Keith, you got it, man. You know, we're on call every day, every night during this process. I mean, this Giants quarterback search, as you know, it's dragged on. It's had twists and turns, so never a dull moment. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I'm not a Giants fan, so I guess I can't feel the pain that Giants fans have felt the last few seasons and then even this signing, but I'm starting to get the feeling that Giants fans aren't excited about this, right? And I don't know, and I'm going to ask you, do you think that Giants fans aren't excited about signing Russell Wilson because they were hoping for Aaron Rodgers, or do you think it's more so that they feel like now they're not going to draft the young quarterback of the future in this draft?
Well, there's the disappointment of pursuing and believing the Giants were getting Matthew Stafford only for Stafford to turn them down. Mm-hmm. And then the hope that they were going to get Rodgers, who, if you wanted to categorize these quarterbacks quality-wise, despite the disaster that was the Jets and his tenure there, talent-wise, Rodgers still offered that glimmer of hope of this 31st-ranked offense being something much more. With him off the table, there's the disappointment there. There's also, from the Giants fan base, I think, a level of confusion, because once the Jameis Winston signing happened, the feeling was, oh, so this is a guy who we know turns the ball over, but is affordable, can push the ball down the field. Malik Nabers can get his touches and targets, run after catch. You know, you have somebody capable who also isn't costing a lot that you can then pair with a rookie draft pick on a rookie contract, and off you go into both the present and future. Signing Wilson on top of that kind of reinforces the desperation, the fact that Rodgers is no longer an option, and also calls into question that they're still pursuing a guy like Wilson, whether the Giants even feel like they can get the quarterback at that number three pick. And then the unanswered question, of course, Keith, like just when we start the offseason, is who's their franchise QB? Like, they have two quarterbacks now, plus Tommy DeVito, but they still don't have a franchise quarterback in the building after this signing.
Yeah, to me, I think it just points to win now, you know, them making moves in the immediate and them saying, hey, okay, you know, we've got two guys here who won games in the NFL last year. One of these guys, and I think the lean is that Russ is QB1 and then that, you know, Winston is a backup. One of these guys is going to help us win some games, and we can still draft a quarterback, but later in the draft. So my next question to you is, hey, at number three overall, the Giants are on the clock. Who are they taking?
Right. No, good question. Well, I think Shedeur Sanders is the player that everybody's looking at, everybody's watching, everybody's thinking about when it comes to the Giants at number three right now. Although the Stafford pursuit and even the signings of Wilson, Winston seem to point to the fact that maybe, and listen, their process is still ongoing with these quarterbacks, but maybe the Giants aren't either confident that they're going to be able to get their guy at three because he's going to go one or two, or they don't think that franchise QB actually exists, right? Could that be a Travis Hunter? Could that be an Abdul Carter there? We'll see about that. I think Shador, if he's not the number two pick, profiles as the most likely pick right now at number three. Interesting, though, you know, the Cleveland Browns, just like the Giants and the Titans, are a team that looks desperate for a quarterback and obviously in the market and is doing the research on all these top QBs. Nobody knows exactly which direction they're going. It seems like some certainty right now that the Tennessee Titans are going to take Cam Ward number one overall from Miami. But are the Browns going to go QB? Will they take Shador? Justina Anderson, insider, just reported tonight after the Giants signed Russell Wilson that a source told her that the Browns are sending some signs that they potentially are open to trading back. So could the Giants be moving up there to protect their turf and get their guys? Will somebody else be trying to jump them? Still a lot of uncertainty about what they'll be able to do because they won that game against the Colts late in the year and they won themselves out of the controlling their own destiny position.
We're on the phone right now with Pat Leonard, who covers the Giants for the New York Daily News. I'm just deep into thought about, like, it's one, how the board shakes out. I don't know. I think that the Cleveland Browns need to draft a quarterback just to restart their franchise. Deshaun Watson was a mistake. They did trade for Kenny Pickett. But when you have Myles Garrett come back and you have Myles Garrett take the money and talk about winning, and, you know, he did an interview where he said, yeah, you know, he's got an idea who's going to be playing quarterback. Like, there were some rumors that maybe it's a Kirk Cousins reunion with Kevin Stefanski, but I just think still Kirk Cousins is 35 years old. Like, I think they're inclined to take Shador Sanders. And if he's not there, I really do like the idea of Travis Hunter. I've been leaning into the fact that he's a star. You know, he came here to New York, won the Heisman. He's got millions of followers. He's a freak athlete. He's a football first guy. He's a two-way player. So, hey, if it doesn't work at corner, maybe it works at receiver, but maybe it works at both. Maybe you actually land, and I'm not saying he's Shohei Ohtani. He's nowhere near what Shohei Ohtani is in football, but maybe you land a guy that they're saying could potentially be the Shohei Ohtani of football. And then what do you think about the idea of, okay, you draft Hunter 3 overall, and then maybe you see how far a Jackson Dart or a Jalen Milroe drops in the draft, so you can still satisfy the fans that are saying we need a young quarterback in this draft.
I like that idea, and I do think Hunter will make some team better. I agree with that. One concern, though, is like a guy like Jackson Dart, you know, his stock has been rising ever since the NFL season ended and the offseason and the draft process started. And if you draft a position player, if you're trying to trade into the back of the first or use an early second round pick on Jackson Dart, I don't think you're getting him. Now, does Jalen Milroe fall into that category? You know, you're talking about, you know, the Quinn Ewers, you know, the McCords. Like, you're talking about kind of a different class of developmental quarterback. I mean, I think getting a developmental rookie in here is paramount. So in some scenario, the Giants have to be adding, with a draft pick, a quarterback that Brian Daboll can get his hands on and try to develop and show ownership and John Mara some progress and a sliver of hope, not just from the coaching development standpoint, but also from the personnel identification standpoint from Joe Shane in the front office, that they know talent when they see it. So I think either way they come out of this draft with a passer. You know, I think, you know, Dart, though, is a very interesting name because, like I said, the scenario of getting him after getting a Travis Hunter is really tempting. But where do you have to trade up to get that player if you're using the number three on Hunter? It might be too expensive to get all the way up there to get him.
Yeah, I agree. I think he is the riser of this draft. There are so many quarterback needy teams, and there's always going to be a surprise team. Like last year, the Falcons are like, yeah, we'll take Michael Penix. Somebody is going to say, yeah, we're drafting Jackson Dart. So even though the Giants pick 34 overall in the second round, where you imagine them being able to trade up back into the first round, I know Tankathon has Jackson Dart at 37 going to the Raiders. So He would potentially be there in that world, right, for the Giants to take in the second round. But let's talk about this, right? The draft is unknown, but what we do know is with the money that the Giants have had, they've already spent and added some talented players, a couple offensive linemen, Stone Forsyth and James Hudson. I really like the Javon Holland signing, even Paulson Adebo. What do you think about this free agent class that they're bringing in? I even talked about, you know, little names like Lil Jordan Humphrey, pun intended, and Zach Pascal. Like, those are small signings, marginal guys, but they're guys that could make an impact in the locker room and the level of practice and the level of compete that the Giants have. What do you think they've done, or how do you feel so far about what they've done with the money they've had to spend in free agency?
Yeah, I think they've definitely targeted, you know, specific positions of need, and they are well aware of the positions where they need higher level caliber talent on the field. Corner and safety were two positions there. My favorite signing of that first wave of free agency was Chauncey Golston from Dallas.
Yes.
I like that signing a lot. I think that the Giants' negligence last year showed up in many ways on the roster, but especially in the trenches on the defensive side of the ball. They did not have, they invested a lot in the Brian Burns trade, but they were not able to set edges well enough in the running game, and they didn't have enough depth on the interior to complement Dexter Lawrence. And so I like that signing a lot. I think Golston plays with some violence and some attitude. Those are the types of players I want to see more added to this team. You know, Adebo, hopefully he's healthy. Had Cam Jordan on Talking Ball a couple weeks ago, said that he believes he is a number one corner and that they had two number ones when he was paired with Lattimore down there with the Saints. So that's encouraging to hear. My one major concern from the free agent process, though, is that the Giants are kind of resting on their laurels when it comes to the offensive line. Now, they do still have the draft. I would be shocked if they didn't use a draft pick on like a guard or a tackle slash guard, a guy with some flex who can compete and develop, because I know the Giants have a higher opinion of their offensive line than people like myself do. But I do think, regardless of what you think of their ups and downs of last year, you need to continue throwing assets at that position and hitting on that talent. And Joe Shane has not yet shown that he can accurately judge guys who can win on the line of scrimmage there. So that is my glaring concern coming into the free agent process.
Pat, there's not too much more to ask you. I mean, we talked about Russell Wilson. We talked about the potential draft picks. Oh, I'll throw another one in there for you. Like, do you think Jameis Winston signed with the idea that he would be QB1? Because I do remember him saying, you know, he wants to sign somewhere and get an opportunity to start. Now, what do you think the dynamic is going to be? Are they going to tell Russell Wilson and Jameis that they're competing for QB1? Or are they going to say Russ gets the nod from his pedigree and his, you know, more experience and better resume, and you know, Jameis, you're going to be the two? Do you think there'll be any issues there? We saw some issues last year when it was Drew Lock thinking that he was QB2, and then Tommy DeVito became QB2 once they moved on from Daniel Jones.
That's a good question. I think Jameis knows what he is right now in his career, which is a guy who, even if a team likes him, they're going to put him probably in a competition of some sorts. They know that they can trust him as a backup, and he can start games if they need him to. I do think the timing of his signing is very unusual, though, and from the standpoint of what did he expect and where did the Giants go from there, I think that signing indicated that point, and obviously this was only a few days ago. At that point, the Giants didn't know if they were going to come out empty-handed of this whole chase of all these veteran quarterbacks. Like, Joe Flacco walked out of the building without a contract. Mason Rudolph was someone who reportedly they were trying to set up a Zoom for, and he just ended up leaving Tennessee and going to Pittsburgh. And then Wilson was hanging out there. Rodgers was leaving them on read. So I think the Winston signing was more anything, you know, we got to get a guy under contract here. And then from Winston's standpoint, he's going somewhere where he knows he's going to have a chance to at least compete. And then the Wilson signing, the Giants flares that they're still in the veteran market, signals that that they still believed that they needed to do better and do more there. I would be shocked if Russell Wilson signed with the Giants at a $10.5 million guaranteed number without some sort of assurance that he was going to start early. Not that he has much leverage here, because the Steelers didn't really want him back, and he did not have a strong market out there. But it would surprise me if he didn't sign here, at least with some assurance that he wasn't going to go into the season taking some snaps. I mean, you remember last year when he came in and visited the Giants, the reason he wasn't a Giant is because they were like, well, we still have Daniel Jones under contract here. We can't like sit here and guarantee you the week one job.
Yep.
And that's how he ended up going to Pittsburgh. And he only didn't start that season because of the calf injury. So I think you're looking at Russell Wilson as the starter now. But again, it's going to be one of those situations. We get onto the field in the summer, there's going to be plenty of reps where Jameis Winston's going to look better than Russ. And I think Brian Daboll's under the gun here to demonstrate that he can coach Russell Wilson to some success like Arthur Smith did in the early part of last season before the wheels came off.
Yeah, and we'll see where Malik Nabers has a lean, whether he likes that football coming out of the hand of Jameis or Russell Wilson. And I've already made jokes about like they can't play future in the locker room. I know that the Giants stayed away from Hard Knocks for years, and then they did the offseason Hard Knocks, which was a huge mistake. But hey, you already made that mistake. They should sign up for the preseason Hard Knocks in August, because now you've got Sierra coming to camp. You've got Jameis, right? And they talk so much about how New York now, you don't need to come to New York for your brand. Well, I certainly think it's going to help the socialites with, you know, Russell Wilson and Sierra that like to go to the Met Gala. And then even Jameis Winston, who was working for Fox Sports at the Super Bowl. Like, now we've got some stars. You draft Travis Hunter. Let's go. This is Hard Knocks right here. This is the next Hard Knocks on HBO.
No doubt. I definitely expect, you know, former Yankee minor leaguer Russell Wilson to be thrown out of first pitch in the next week or two, right? Like, you have to admit that. You can see that coming from a mile away. And you're right, too. We got robbed with not having the Giants run it back on Hard Knocks this year with this whole quarterback frenzy and how desperate they've been. And you got Brian Daboll down at the Miami Pro Day while the rest of the Giants brass are. I mean, it's just so much going on here right now. We got robbed by giving them Hard Knocks, too.
Pat, you're the man. Thanks for giving us your time on short notice tonight as we got this news. I'll let you go back to enjoying the rest of your Tuesday night.
Giants country, let's ride.
Giants country, let's ride. Well done. That was Pat Leonard from the New York Daily News. Check out the Talking Ball podcast with Pat Leonard on his YouTube channel. This is Keith McPherson on The Fan. We're going to get back to your calls. Man, shout out to everybody that stayed on hold. We still have a full rack of calls, which means there are Giants fans, and there's some of you, Lawrence in Oklahoma City, Robbie in Lenox, some guys that I know have something to say about Russell Wilson, this move, and what it means for their beloved G-Man. We're talking Russell Wilson and the Giants, but not for too much longer. I just want to get everybody on that's been holding and waiting to weigh in. Giants fans are kind of split on this right now. I think there are some people celebrating it, some people that are mad. They're mad about Matthew Stafford, as you heard Pat Leonard join us and say. Some are mad about Aaron Rodgers, like Lugie was on the Lugauer saying, I was ready to wait for Aaron Rodgers. No, Aaron Rodgers is the song that finally ends. We're done. You know, Jameis was praying for the Lord to deliver him from pick sixes. The Lord just delivered us from all the nonsense that we had to go through the last 2 years of Aaron Rodgers. That's the silver lining in all this, Giants fans. You have no idea what version of 41-year-old Aaron Rodgers you were about to get. We are blessed today. Amen. Aaron Rodgers is done. They changed the number to 888-808-1019. All those eights were for Aaron Rodgers. This is the Aaron Rodgers hotline for the last 2 years. It's done. And if you're a Giants fan still talking about waiting for Aaron Rodgers, he would have left you at the altar. He was going to make you wait forever. This is a dude that flirted around with Minnesota, went all the way out to P-Town, met with the Steelers for 6 hours. He's got a house in New Jersey. Did he come check out the Giants? We heard about Russell Wilson. We heard about Jameis Winston, Joe Flacco. We didn't hear anything about Aaron Rodgers driving over to meet with the Giants. So it was never a real thing. He was never really that interested. 888-808-1019. Lawrence is in Oklahoma City. Lawrence, you're on The Fan.
Man, I had a feeling that this was going to happen, and I'm not mad about it. And for the Giants fans who are upset about it, let's remember how bad we've been in recent history and how much better we've stabilized our quarterback room.
Beggars cannot be choosers. I was saying that about Winston last night. Beggars can't be choosers. You have NFL-caliber quarterbacks now. You haven't had that in a few years.
You go and compare this quarterback room to any quarterback room in the NFL, and as far as depth goes, we measure up just fine. Not saying we're going to be a playoff team, but we're not going to embarrass ourselves with this quarterback room. And it gives us the availability to make clear decisions when we're in the draft. So whoever they believe is best at three, if Sanders is available, that's great, because then he'll be able to sit and he won't have to play right away. But I really hope we go and we get Abdul Carter. I think Abdul Carter would push his defense over the edge. And yeah, that's all. I'm happy to be a Giants fan today, though, because they're making decisions that aren't going to embarrass me. So that's great.
There we go, Lawrence. I like Abdul Carter as the move there. If it's Shedeur Sanders at number two, you add Abdul Carter here, Penn State guy, get another Penn State guy, make up for not getting Micah Parsons, make up for the departure of the other Penn State guy in Saquon, rush the passer. He's a big Eagles fan. He'd have to leave all that Eagles stuff behind and join the G-men. I can see it. Travis Hunter, I think, is more realistic, though. I just think Travis Hunter's a star. I think he's ready to go, and I think when you just play the law of averages, hey, get him some reps at receiver, get him some reps at corner, see which one he's better at, and if he's that good at both and has the athleticism and the endurance and the stamina to actually play both sides of the ball, like, you might get a star in the league. You might get a rare case of, like, the people will be tuning in to watch Giants games. People will be at John Mara. People will be buying tickets to come see Travis Hunter play corner, play receiver. And in this NFL, he doesn't have to play 100% of the snaps. There can be packages for him to play. He could be a nickel corner. He could be the fourth receiver. You see where I'm going with this? I can see it happening.
Absolutely.
Robbie Lennox, you got it.
It's cornerback Keith McPherson. How are you? Welcome back. Welcome back, sir. Nice
Thanks.
To hear you. You're welcome. Hey, listen, about this Russell Wilson thing, I'm actually happy about it, and I'll tell you why. Because I want to see Abdul Carter, Travis Hunter in a Giant uniform. Take the best available guy. I agree with you 100%. If Jackson Dart is there at 34, grab him, okay? I'm not that interested right now in getting the young quarterback. Right now, I'm interested in just building a great defense, Keith. To me, that's what wins in a cold weather city. Why did the Eagles beat the Kansas City Chiefs this year? Because they had a great defense.
Yeah.
Never mind their offense.
They took Mahomes out of the game so fast.
Damn right. Yep.
You're on it, Robbie. I'm right there with you, what you said about, like you take the best available player now. The pressure isn't so much on drafting a young quarterback because you have two NFL-caliber quarterbacks. And, like, take the can't-miss prospect.
Absolutely. I'm wondering if Travis Hunter would actually be the first two-way player we've seen in a long time. You know, I think about, you know, the history of football, guys like Bednarik playing both ways. Everybody played both ways. I mean, you know, years ago, my father used to tell me guys played both ways all the time.
These guys are freaks now. It's so hard to do now. Like, Deion couldn't really do it. Even, like, Jabril Peppers did it at Michigan. He couldn't do it in the league. Charles Woodson. It's hard to do now.
Yeah, it's tough, especially, with today's, you know, complicated NFL assignments and so forth. But, I mean, you know, as far as being an offensive player, defensive player, and memorizing everything and being involved with the defensive and offensive quarterback.
Like, can you imagine Hunter having to guard A.J. Brown and then flip the ball and he's got to deal with Quinyon Mitchell or Cooper DeJean?
Right, more chance to get hurt. Exactly, more chance to get hurt as well, you know what I'm saying?
As far as
the Yankees go, one Yankee point, I don't know what the pessimism is. I know we lost Cole. I know we got some injuries. It's going to be a good season, all right? I have arguments all day long, Keith. I argue. By the way, send my regards now to my friend Gerard, who's a diehard Mets fan, is afraid to call this station, will argue with me for 24 hours.
Afraid to call
long.
Why?
I don't know. He's really shy. He calls my show all the time when I was up here doing radio in New England, right? I said to him, call the fan, talk about the Mets, right? And he and I argue about Soto. I said, you know what? Soto's a great hitter. Don't get me wrong. But seeing Aaron Judge back in right field, where he naturally belongs, and not having to see Juan Soto play right field is fine with me, okay? He's a great hitter. He's taking anything away from Juan Soto. But to me, if Juan Soto sat down actually and looked at his situation and said, where's my greater path to winning a World Series? Is it with the Mets or is it with the Yankees? And I feel like Juan Soto's a big phony, okay? All he went was with the dollar bills, all right? That's what I feel, okay? Aaron Judge wanted to be a Yankee. He didn't want to be a Yankee, all right?
Correct. So, thanks for the call, Robbie. And now you done got me going a bit. For the Yankee universe, I'm going to get into it. I'm going to start getting into it now. I can't wait to see y'all, man. I can't wait till Happy New Year. I can't wait It's a family reunion on 161st and River. I've been to so many opening days in this last 10 years. It doesn't matter who's on the field and who's not on the field. It's about us. That's something that's not going to change. The best fans in the world, the best fan base in baseball, the Bronx Zoo, what that stadium turns into with crazy Yankee fans. And the New York Yankees know that. The front office, the players. Juan Soto didn't care anything about that. Juan Soto can tell you it's about, 6 to 7 years what the Mets are going to be. The Mets, who just made some moves a couple years ago, had to sell off at the trade deadline to try and get some guys in their farm system. The Mets, it's a Mets world right now. The Mets are adding every freaking gimmick they can add. They got a 5-borough race now with it's like a damn amusement park, not a ballpark. LED lights, a dance crew, and bring the whole family. They are doing everything in their power to sell tickets. But you know what sells tickets for the Yankees? The pinstripes, the brand, the tradition of winning, consistently winning. So, like, let the Mets rebrand and Steve Cohen come up with all these different giveaways and jerseys and bobbleheads and all these different things, from a Mets house to Amazing Day, whatever. None of that translates to wins on the field. And with Juan Soto, I am starting to actually love where we are with this Juan Soto stuff. And I was talking about it last night. Now, you know, if you thought that the Subway Series wasn't really a rivalry, I'm guilty in that, because I've looked at the Mets like Jeter looked at the Mets. They're just the Mets. It's going to take them forever to potentially be able to box with the Yankees, right? There's so much history that they cannot gain ground on. I'm not 40 years old yet. Next season makes it 40 years since the Mets have won a World Series. They're not winning the World Series this year. I'm on wax. I'm on record. They're not winning the World Series this year. And I guess if I'm wrong about that, I'll have to eat crow. They're not winning the World Series this year with Griffin Canning and Clay Holmes is your ace. It's funny how, like, the Mets are immune to injuries. The Yankees have a bunch of injuries. And for Yankee fans, fret not. If we actually sign Juan Soto for $760 million and 16 years and had the same injuries, we'd be worse off. 888-808-1019. Now, don't get it twisted. Juan Soto is generational. I'm not going to lie to you. I watched every at-bat. I met the guy. I've talked to you about, like, he is a superhero. That's what I'm saying, though. We have, on one side, the Mets fans who have finally landed one of the best players ever, a superhuman at bat that's going to win you games, that's going to hit home runs, that's going to make you proud to be a Mets fan, happy to go to the ballpark because you want to see what he's going to do next. There is no game over until Juan Soto gets up to the plate. That's a good feeling to have. Yankee fans had it in the ALCS. Yankee fans had it knowing, hey, Juan Soto's coming up. Juan Soto is not leaving until he wins this at-bat to send the Yankees back to the World Series. That's in the past, though. That's in the past. Juan Soto had Aaron Judge. Juan Soto had Stanton. Juan Soto had Cole. Juan Soto had a bunch of other guys from Gleyber Torres to Jazz Chisholm around him, too. Let's see if in year one, Lindor and Nimmo, who we'll get to, all those guys rally around him and can get back. But, like, Mets fans got to lock in more on the NL East. When you look at these odds, when you look at the future odds for the World Series, they have two teams in your division ahead of you with better odds. Why is that? Because, like, the Phillies have gotten to a World Series, multiple World Series in this recent time. They've won one. The Braves have gotten to the World Series, won one. Like, you have two teams in your division that they have a history of winning, a standard of winning. So, like, instead of being so worried about the crosstown team that has a history and a standard of winning that you don't really have to worry about too much, a little bit more this year, because now, to add more juice to the rivalry, you thought Juan Soto was gassing it up. Well, now they're actually giving us a weekend series. Now it's 6 games. We got 3 in the Bronx, 3 in Queens, not the little Tuesday, Wednesday, 4-game set where me, I looked at the Yankees and I'm like, bro, they're putting Jamai Jones at leadoff, JD Davis. I can't even remember Narvaez catching, like... They don't care about these games. The Yankees don't care about beating the Mets in the regular season. I bet you they care now. After Juan Soto's out there talking about, oh, the Yankees were in first place all along. But I know they're going to be good for the next 6 to 7 years because of Judge, because of the length of Judge's contract, the length of Cole's contract. You're looking at a Yankees team now with guys like Jason Dominguez, Ben Rice, Austin Wells, Anthony Volpe. Luis Gil will return. And now people got to see Spencer Jones and George Lombard Jr. So I don't know where Juan Soto's coming up with. Like, the Yankees aren't going to be good after that. Where are those kids going to be in 6-7 years? Few of them are going to be all-stars. It doesn't make sense to me. Oh, I know where it makes sense. It's the dollars that make the sense. Steve Cohen, the richest owner in the sport, you know he's going to spend. Hal's out here telling you that, you know, $307 million, $308 million is enough, and I don't have to spend more than I understood. But then you have an owner who's willing to give Juan Soto a suite, premium tickets to the Clover Club, security detail for the whole Supreme Court of Soto, extra blouses, skirts, and purses for his mom. Hal Steinbrenner wasn't going for that. The Yankees weren't going for all that. You're great, Juan, but you're not greater than the pantheon of Yankees that we've had. 888-808-1019. Juan Soto joined the Mets, and I wish he would say this, not just the money, say, I want to be the greatest Met of all time. I can't be the greatest Yankee of all time. If I win a World Series with the Yankees, I'm in a handful of other guys that have won a World Series with the Yankees. If I win a World Series with the Mets, I'm legendary. Say that. Say that instead of, another team offered more money. And, you know, it was please, it's not about prospects. You took the highest offer. And you know what? That is what you should do for your entire family, your legacy. Nobody's faulting you for that. But why do you got to save face? You got to save face because there's this constant back and forth from little brother trying to be big brother, saying that, no, we've arrived. You haven't arrived until you win something. Enough already. I can't wait till these games start. And if the Yankees are terrible, which I don't think they're going to be terrible, I can't wait to see what Cody Bellinger looks like. I can't wait to see what Paul Goldschmidt looks like. Austin Wells is going to lead off, run it. Jazz, first full year in the Yankee uniform and the Yankee. Let's see it, man. And I know Brian Cashman, he's going to add. Ryan Yarbrough, come on down. He's probably checking and, you know, tapping in with other teams right now to see if there's a bat we can add. And some other guys are going to rise. This bullpen is going to be nails. Oh, Devin Williams is our closer now. So we don't have to go through, oh, here comes Clay Holmes. We're done with that. We're done with that. That's now the Mets' ace. The Met fan won't tell you that they're worried about the rotation. And they shouldn't. They shouldn't. Don't get cold feet now. You wanted to swim in the big boy pool. Don't jump head first in. Your rotation is good. Your lineup is good. Pete Alonso is going to have a banner year. Lindor's back is not going to flare up on him. Like, yeah, run it. Brett Beatty has arrived. Let's see it. Let the games begin. 888-808-1019. I got plenty more ammo. But, you know, Robbie got me going there, so I had to let that breathe a little bit.
Well, first off, Keith, the Mets have had injuries too. Francisco Alvarez, Jeff McNeil,
Frankie Montas, Sean Manaea.
Both teams, frankly, have been really unlucky in spring training with injuries. That we can agree on.
No, you wouldn't. The Yankee fan is like defeated over Cole out for the year into next year. Heel not starting the year. Schmidt not starting the year. And like the Met fan is laughing at us because we're going to be relying on Carlos Carrasco, former Met. Marcus Stroman, former Met. But it's like, you're relying on Tyler McGill. Is David Peterson going to be the same as he was last year? We don't know.
Mets fans.
Kodai Senga barely pitched last year. He's just going to ghost fork miracle ball it up for the whole year? All right.
I wouldn't think.
Show me.
Mets fans aren't, I don't think, assuming that they're going to have a good rotation. The Mets rotation has plenty of issues. The Mets team has plenty of issues.
Juan Soto cures all, though. You got Juan Soto now. You've won everything. You're the top dogs.
He's the best player in baseball, and I will say that money is a factor because Hal Steinbrenner had to call and offer up a lot more to Aaron Judge to sign. That had to happen, right? So money is a factor. Hal is willing to go for the extra few dollars if he thinks it's worth it.
When you look at what Aaron Judge's contract is compared to what Juan Soto's contract is, and when you actually talk about it, like, Judge took less. The Padres offered $400 million. Judge took less to stay in the Yankee uniform with one hat on his head. Juan Soto was always for the streets. After the World Series, right? A demoralizing loss. We don't have to recant. Juan Soto turned his hat to the back and said, I'm hoping to all 30 teams. No, you're not. Do the math, silly. You're not going back to the Nationals. You're not going back to the Padres. You're going to stay here in New York. You were always staying here in New York. It was a two-team race. You weren't going up to Boston. You damn sure weren't going to Canada. So miss me with all the nonsense, bro. You went to the richest owner in the sport. You and Scott Boras were always going there. And if it was a measuring contest, Steve Cohen, he was not going to lose this one to Hal Steinbrenner, and he ultimately didn't. But that has nothing to do with the results of this 162-game season completely, coming up. The Mets have to overcome their own history.
Completely agree with that. Frankly, and again, I tell Yankee fans this all the time, the Yankees haven't won anything in 15 or 16 years. And I don't care that they made the World Series last year. Frankly, that means jack. Because they haven't won anything. Nobody cares about second place.
But let's talk about it, right?
Nobody cares about second place.
You know what I also don't care about? The American League is weak. No, it's not. It was weak last year. We have no idea what this American League is going to look like. Don't tell me that the Yankees got another cakewalk this year, no matter what. No, we don't know that. I have no idea.
I think the assumption is that the NL has tougher teams.
Now, that is fact.
I think that's the assumption. So if that is fact,
yeah. And I'm rooting for the Metropolitans, I'm going to pipe down a bit knowing the Dodgers exist. Like I already mentioned, the Braves and Phillies in your own division
exist. If you
the Padres took the Dodgers to the brink of elimination, and they're looking to come back and do, you know what I'm saying?
If you have a brain in your head, you realize that the Yankees have a much easier path than the Mets based on the teams in each league.
To get to the Fall Classic, we can assume so, yes.
Yeah, that's what, and I think Mets fans understand that. The Mets have a much difficult road to go. All of the stuff when it comes to, you know, the mascot race and uniforms, which I think the gray uniform looks awesome, by the way. All of that stuff, that's all like nonsense. That's all like filibuster stuff. Nobody really cares about that. No Mets fan really cares about that.
You know, the first 15,000 fans will get a Juan Soto pin if they're in the building.
And I'm sure they will treasure that with their lives.
Shout out to the Mets marketing team. Like, they failed with the Hawk Tua Girl first pitch, but they are rolling out the most gimmicks and promotional items and all these type of things to get every Met fan, from the casual fan that just came along for the Grimace ride to the, you know, the rally pimp fans, the Seymour Wiener fans, even those Candelita fans.
Absolutely.
That want to do OMG Part 2. Like, they've got enough things to make you say, all right, I'm coming out to the ballpark. They sold the tickets. The tickets are sold. You know what happens next, Paulie? That place is going to be packed.
Yes, it will.
From the first game.
It will be.
And if they fail, SNY is going to be showing us all these goofy-ass Mets fans' faces like, oh, what Juan Soto struck out. Oh, I thought we were womp, womp, womp. You know how they do that with the camera.
Absolutely. SNY is very good at that.
So this is what I'm saying. Money can't buy you everything. There are things in this world that money can't buy.
Agreed.
Nobody knows what's about to happen.
Agreed.
So fill up the ballpark with all the gimmicks and all the Juan Soto hype.
Yankees have
now
gimmicks,
you
too.
Get
remember
it done.
The Aaron Judge, the Judge's Chambers, all that stuff with the funny hair and the judge's robes. It's the same stuff. It's just done differently.
Not really.
It's the same thing. It's okay. It's okay.
Not really. We don't have a mascot. We don't have race.
But
we have a dance crew dancing on top of the dugout.
The giveaways that you
know, you had a whole McDonald's Grimace marketing campaign and then put a seat in the 300 level honoring him. Like, for what?
I understand. Why is there Judge's Chambers in right field? I don't know. It's to sell tickets.
For why? What does it do? And David Stern, shout out to him for saying, we're not running back all that goofy stuff, man. This stuff could blow up in our faces. That's another thing. Shout out to David Stearns. Do it again.
Dude, the stone cold
killer.
And
make sure this pitching lab is working again. You know, I always give him credit for being active. You know, not just being a passenger. I feel like the Mets have had GMs and people in the front office that just let the car ride off the road into the ditch. And he didn't do that last year. Hauser, you're trash. You're gone. Joey Wendell, it didn't work out. Goodbye. Like, little things like that.
Jose Iglesias, and he's
Jose
a stone
Iglesias,
cold killer.
Come on down.
He knew that it might happen again, but it's extremely unlikely that you are going to catch that lightning in a bottle twice in a row. So what did he do? He said, no way am I bringing this guy back. Get rid of him. And that's okay, because I love that from David Stearns, because I don't think you're going to get the same performance from Jose Iglesias, who is going to have a spot in Mets fans' heart for the rest of time.
Yeah,
frankly,
he'll be back maybe with the Padres. Maybe that revenge.
But
game
that doesn't
happens.
Mean you have to bring him back because what?
No, it's
that
business.
Was an aberration. It's business. Stearns is a stone cold killer. I love David Stearns. What he's doing so far.
So let's see if this team that he put together for 2025 can do this. The bar is set. You got to get back to the National League Championship Series, and then you got to beat whoever's there and get to the World Series and win it this year. You're in the big boy pool now. Don't tell me, oh, making the postseason is good enough. Because, I mean, that seems hard enough for the Mets to go back-to-back years making the postseason. It seems hard enough for the Mets just to have a better overall record than the New York Yankees. How many times in our lives have we seen that? And I'm talking to you young Mets fans. Because there's a lot of these young Mets fans with a battery in their back. A lot of them be on my ass, pause. A lot of them be in my mentions and DM me, telling me I'm coping. Telling me I'm salty. No, I lived through the five World Series that I've seen. I was at the World Series games last year. I'm good. I've seen it. I've felt it. I've experienced championships. I know what it's like to win. I also know what it's like to lose. You don't know what it's like yet to win it all. Juan Soto doesn't guarantee you a win. So buckle up. Here we go. Another ride. Here we go. 162-888-808-1019. Keith McPherson on the Fan. Let's take another call before we go to break. I mean, we were talking Russell Wilson, but y'all got me going, bro. Y'all got me going. David's in Manalapan on the Fan. Go for it, David.
Hey, Keith, how are you?
Great.
So, as far as the Giants go, I don't mind the move. I mean, I would have been okay with Jameis Winston going in to be the starter and drafting one of these kids, but it seems like you hear all over the place that these kids aren't generational quarterbacks and so maybe the Giants just don't feel worth.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, so I think that's where we are with the Giants' decision making. All of the talk about these two quarterbacks aren't can't miss prospects. These two quarterbacks aren't surefire starters in this league. They're not. You know, they might be bust. They don't have a first round grade. Or Cam Ward is, and now all of a sudden Cam Ward is a lock, and he had his pro day, and he's the first round guy. This is a worthy of a number one pick guy, but not Shador. Well, if that's what everyone's telling you, maybe the Giants feel a little bit of that themselves, where they said we cannot roll the dice here. Joe Shane will never be a GM again. Brian Daboll may never be a head coach again if they roll the dice here on Shador Sanders, which also brings a cloud of Deion Sanders and everything that the Sanders family brings. If this doesn't work out and blows up in our faces, like, we can't take that risk. We need to put together an NFL caliber team this year that can compete and potentially steal some games and win. Let's do that with veterans. This isn't a rookie quarterback. And as good as I think Shador Sanders is, I don't think he's coming in and winning games. And, like, that's what you draft a quarterback that high for. The Bears took Caleb Williams. He played all their games. The Commanders took Jaden Daniels. He took them to the NFC Championship. You know, Drake May sat behind Jacoby Brissett, but pretty quickly got the nod. And he's the guy now. Bo Nix took the Broncos to the playoffs. He played all their games. Like, if you're using a first round pick on a quarterback, like that guy's got to play. And in this modern day NFL, like, Bryce Young played, CJ Stroud played. Like, these guys get forced into action, forced into duty to play. I don't think that's the spot that the Giants feel like they're in, and that's obvious with the moves that they just made to add two guys that could be QB1 in this league, two guys that were QB1 last year in this league, two guys that won games in this league over the last 5 years, plus for Russell Wilson. Tom is in Hawthorne on the Fan. Hello, Tom.
Hey, what's going on, Keith?
Watching this Knicks game a little bit. They're holding it down. I think they need to go on a run here. We're in the second half now. 70, okay, that's a three ball from OG. 77-68 Knicks with a little bit under 10 minutes to go in the third.
I'm unfortunately a fellow Nets fan.
Yeah, we won't mention it. On to the draft.
No, I just, I don't know, I'm a Giants fan, but I hear Lawrence calling, and he's out in OKC, proud Giants fan because of this, but he doesn't have to sit through this crap every week. Like, this guy's washed, man. It's a terrible move. I think, it obviously looks like they're not going to take a QB with this either now, especially because they could have done this before they got Jameis, which would have made sense, and I just don't understand it. It just seems like they have no direction.
No, I think now they're starting to get a little bit of a direction. And I think the Fan direction was, we have to draft a quarterback. We passed on quarterbacks. We look at the Daniel Jones era. That ended. We need a quarterback. And I think Shane and Daboll have put their heads together to say, like, well, the way that the chips have fallen, this isn't the draft to take a quarterback with that top pick. And they also didn't feel that way last year. I think they might have been incorrect, but like, whatever. We don't know if Bo Nix turns into Bo Nix or Michael Penix turns into Michael Penix. What I'm saying is, here we are with this third overall pick. That's a high pick, and there is, like, there's generational talents in Abdul Carter and Travis Hunter available there, or you could trade back and get more picks and add more talented players. So now I think that they're moving under, like, hey, we just need more talent on this team, and we're not in a position to draft a young quarterback and hitch our wagon to him. We need to win games now.
Yeah, especially since they didn't, you know, some of the guys like Stafford and obviously Rodgers like that, they were striking out on that. So they were kind of running out of options. But I just feel like this is definitely not a move that's going to make us competitive by any means. I feel like it's just going to be something that we're going to be sitting there watching things, and I'm going to be heading back up instead of Let's Ride. I'm going to be riding up Route 17 to, you know, third quarter to go watch some real football at home.
Maybe. Thanks for the call, Tom. The NFL is unpredictable. Nobody has any idea what next season is going to be. I just keep going back to Dable's first year where they did not have a lot of talent. They coached their way to some victories. Shane Bowen's got to coach his defense up, and he obviously needs the horses to be able to get it done. Now you have a quarterback room. Just go and add talent. Just go ahead and get the best player available. Before we go to break, Mike, I got you in there from Somerville, New Jersey. You're on the Fan. You're coming in a little scratchy, Mike. You all right?
Yeah, I'm good, Keith. How are you?
All right.
I just wanted to bring up, you know, Jameis Winston. I was a believer. I'm a firm believer in Jameis Winston. I think the Russell signing, $20 million, I liked it, it's 1 year. But I feel like you could have spent that money on 2 to 3 other guys that could have come in and impacted the roster.
Thanks for the call, Mike. It's $21 million potentially. It's $10.5 million guaranteed. So I'm sure there's going to be incentives, like Drew Lock had incentives. And maybe Russ doesn't hit those incentives. I think if you're looking at $4 million for Jameis, $10.5 right now for Russ, you're getting both of these guys for under $15 million. Sam Darnold signed for $37.5 million.